Hey, Bible nerds, this is Dr. Manny Arango, and I'm your host for the Bible Department podcast powered by Arma. This podcast follows a Bible reading plan we created to help you read the entire Bible in a year. You can head to the show notes or thebibledepartment.com to download our reading plan and join the journey. To all my fellow pastors, I've got a question for you. Does your city know that your church exists? Listen, I get it. You're preaching, you're leading, you're discipling, you're doing ministry. We are in the same boat. And let's be honest, social media and marketing, not your strong suit, not mine either. And that's probably the last thing on your mind. And that's why we chose to partner with Church Candy Marketing for our church plant, The Garden. We out here, y'all. They help churches get more actual guests walking through the doors on Sunday without you or I having to stress over ads or algorithms or trying to crack the social media code. Right now, Church Candy is helping nearly 400 churches reach their communities with simple invite ads, and it works. It's super effective. I can tell you from firsthand experience. So if you're tired of being your city's best kept secret, how about you do this? Go to churchcandy.com/Manny and book a free consultation, book a discovery call. Their team will break it all down and show you how to start seeing new faces at your church this Sunday. I'm in the trenches with you, trying to grow the church. And how about we just start a whole campaign? No more empty churches. So let's partner with Church Candy and get our churches full for the glory of Jesus. Let's go. Family, it's day 57. We are making our way through the Gospel of Matthew. Arguably one of my favorite Gospels. It's up there with John. John's probably my absolute favorite. Matthew's a good number two. Hey, if you have not done the reading for today, go ahead, read Matthew chapters 9 through 12, okay? Matthew chapter 9, 10, 11, and 12. We got four chapters every single day. We're staying real consistent through the Gospel of Matthew. Lucked out, you know what I mean? Matthew is an even 28 chapters. And so four chapters a day, 7 days, four chapters a day, 28 chapters. Woo! How much is cool for theology, y'all? Not math, okay? One of our editors in the studio had to help me out. It's giving me, like, hand signals. So, hey, if you haven't done the reading yet, go do it. For the rest of us that have done the reading, let's dive on in. Okay, like always, I'm going to give you some context clues, some nerdy nuggets. I'm going to give you a timeless truth to round it all out. Let's do context first. So, we may actually go back and tweak our Bible reading plan, because here's the deal. Remember how I said yesterday that Matthew has an agenda. Matthew wants to portray Jesus in a certain way. And so Matthew is actually going to put five blocks of teaching. Not only is Jesus going to teach from a mountain, right? Like, portraying him as the new Moses, but he's also going to give five blocks of teaching. And who else is known for five books of teaching? Well, that's Moses. And so Jesus is portrayed as a new Moses. And if anyone wants those five blocks of teaching, I'll give them to you right here. I wish that our Bible reading plan followed these blocks of teaching, like exactly. And it's something that we may go back and tweak later on. I'm a bit of a perfectionist sometimes. So this is one of those things where I'm like, it bothers me that where the Bible reading plan has breaks is right in between some of the natural breaks that we have in the Gospel of Matthew. That probably happens in a lot of books, to be completely honest. I'm just very aware of it in Matthew's Gospel. So here's the five blocks of teaching, and then I'll show you how to spot those five blocks of teaching, okay? So that you can kind of, I know we're talking about Matthew chapter 9 through 12 today, but I kind of want to give context for how to see the whole book. And so Matthew chapter 4 through 7 is going to be the first block of teaching, okay? And it's going to be an announcement of the kingdom, and then Jesus is going to teach the Sermon on the Mount. It's going to end with this verse. Matthew chapter 7, verse 28 and 29 says this, "And when Jesus finished," key word, "and when Jesus finished these sayings, the crowds were astonished at his teaching, for he was teaching them as one who had authority and not as their scribes," okay? So that word "finished" is key. Here's the next block of teaching. It's going to be Matthew chapter 8 to 10. And here's Matthew chapter 11, verse 1. Okay, here's the end of that entire block. It says, "When Jesus had finished instructing his 12 disciples, He went on from there to teach and preach in their cities. The next block of teaching is going to be Matthew 11 to 13. And here's how it's going to finish. This is Matthew 13, verse 53-54. And when Jesus had finished these parables, he went away from there, and coming to his hometown, he taught in their synagogues, so that they were astonished and said, "Where did this man get this wisdom and these mighty works?" So you can see already, right? Each block ends with the word finished, okay? And when Jesus finished these sayings, when Jesus had finished instructing, and when Jesus had finished these parables, the next block of teaching is going to be Matthew chapter 14 to Matthew chapter 20. And here's what we're going to get. Matthew chapter 14 and Matthew chapter 19, and here's what we're going to get in Matthew chapter 19, verse 1 and 2. And when Jesus had finished these sayings, he went away from Galilee and into the region of Judea beyond the Jordan. Large crowds followed him, and he healed them there. We're going to get Matthew chapter 20 to 25, and here's how chapter 26 is going to start. When Jesus had finished all these sayings, he said to his disciples, "You know that after 2 days, the Passover is coming, and the Son of Man will be delivered up to be crucified." Okay, so we get five blocks of teaching. Matthew 4 to 7, Matthew 8 to 10, Matthew 11 to 13, Matthew 14 to 19, and then Matthew 20 to 25. Five solid blocks of teaching. They all end the exact same way with the words "finished." Okay, that announcement that Jesus finished these parables, or Jesus had finished these instructions, or Jesus had finished his teaching, cues you that that block is done. And of course, we have five of them for Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy. Okay, these mirror the five books of Moses. Why? Because Jesus is a new Moses. Okay, most people don't realize that that's happening as they're encountering the Gospel of Matthew. So here's my frustration. Is that the way that I organize the Bible reading plan is that today we're on Matthew chapter 9 and to 12, which is straddling between two sections or two blocks of teachings that are actually in the book of Matthew, okay? So we'll talk a little bit about Matthew chapter 8 to 10, then we'll talk a little bit about Matthew 11 to 13, and, you know, we're going to do the best that we can do, all right? Okay, so Matthew chapter 8 to 10. Is all about a demonstration of the kingdom. So Matthew chapter 4 to 7 was an announcement of the kingdom. And then Jesus began to teach about the culture of the kingdom. What is this kingdom going to be like? Okay, imagine when a president is campaigning, there's kind of some key issues that that president is going to make central to his campaign. I want you to think about the word gospel. This is originally a political word. Okay, so when a king has a gospel, it's almost like the promise that they're making. What is your kingdom going to be like? What is the kingdom of Alexander the Great going to be like? What is the kingdom of Julius Caesar going to be like? What is the kingdom, or what is the gospel of Nero going to be like? Okay, and so we get an announcement of the kingdom. Hey, the kingdom of God is here. But everybody has different ideas about what that kingdom is actually going to be like. The Jewish understanding of the kingdom was a violent overthrow of the Roman government. So Jesus gives the Sermon on the Mount as a central, cultural, defining teaching for what the kingdom of God is actually like. Hey, kingdom of God, it's not a military kingdom. Like, we're not about to have a coup. You know what I'm saying? Like that's not what we're doing. And now Matthew chapter 8 to 10 is demonstrating the kingdom. And so Matthew goes on a tear. There's actually nine stories in this section. Okay, Jesus heals a leper, the centurion's servant, sick mom, stormy seas, demonized men, a paralyzed man, a dead girl and a sick woman, two blind men, and a mute man. Okay, we've got nine stories that all demonstrate what happens when people come into contact with the kingdom. Okay, what happens when nature comes into contact with the kingdom? What happens when sickness comes into contact with the kingdom? What happens when demons come into contact with the kingdom? What happens when the broken, the marginalized, and those who are on the outskirts of society come into contact with the kingdom? This is going to culminate in chapter 10, where Jesus is going to commission the 12, okay, to go out with authority to do the very things that they've seen him do. They are going to take the kingdom, and they're going to become agents of this kingdom. Now we get into Matthew chapter 11. And that next block is Matthew chapter 11 to 13. And we're going to get multiple responses to Jesus' kingdom message, or Jesus as Messiah. Okay. We're going to get some positive responses. People are like, oh, this is awesome. It's the Messiah. Then we're going to get a neutral response. Okay. We're going to get a response from John the Baptist that is not positive or negative, but it's definitely a questioning. Are you the one, or should we be expecting somebody else? And for our timeless truth, we're going to dig into that story with John the Baptist. And then last, we're going to get negative. Okay. The Pharisees and the chief priests and the scribes and the leaders, like Israel's leaders, are definitely like, yeah, this guy's got to go. Which then we're going to get parables. Chapter 13 is going to all be about parables, parables that demonstrate what the kingdom of God is like. The parables are doing a lot of what the Sermon on the Mount did, but just in a different format. Okay, the Sermon on the Mount is like a sermon, but the parables are parables. Same ethos, same spirit, same culture, like a lot of the same substance, but different stylistic writing choice. Okay, a parable is communicating in parabolic fashion, and a sermon is communicating like a sermon. So, and then that chapter of parables is going to end, okay, with Matthew chapter 13, verse 53 says, and when Jesus had finished these parables, and we kind of know that block is over. So our Bible reading plan kind of straddles these two independent blocks, and there are five blocks. Why? Because Matthew is trying to portray a very Jewish Jesus. Now, here's where I'll drop a nerdy nugget on you. I'll actually look this up so that I can quote it really well. We're going to see Ezekiel chapter 1, verse 10 says this. Their faces looked like this. Each of the four had a face of a human being. And on the right side, face of a lion. And on the left side, face of an ox. And also had the face of an eagle. Okay, so human, lion, ox, eagle. Human, lion, ox, eagle. Revelation chapter 4, verse 7 is going to just straight jack this from Ezekiel, bring this back. And Revelation 4, 7 says the first living creature was a lion. The second was an ox. The third faced like a man. And the fourth was a flying eagle. Okay, so those four beasts are actually a really, really, really good way to begin to wrap your minds around the portraits that the four gospels are painting. Okay, so the Gospel of Matthew portrays Jesus like a lion. Okay, he's king. In Matthew's gospel, Jesus is king, and he's the lion of the tribe of Judah, because Matthew is a Jew writing to a Jewish audience. Okay, so Matthew, the only thing that Matthew's concerned with is that he's the son of David, son of Abraham. He's the king. He's the Jewish Messiah. Messiah means anointed one. Okay. And who was anointed in the Old Testament? Kings were anointed in the Old Testament. The Gospel of Mark portrays Jesus as an ox. So one of the key verses for Mark's gospel is, I did not come to be served, but to serve and to give my life as a ransom for many. The moment you think of Mark's gospel, you should think of that verse. That Jesus did not come to be served, but to serve and give his life as a ransom for many. What is an ox? It is a burden-bearing beast. That is the ox. The ox is there to serve the farmer. The ox is there to serve others. Okay, so when you see an ox, you see Jesus is able to bear the burden that I'm not able to bear. He's bearing the cross as a servant of humanity. The Gospel of Luke portrays Jesus as human. So in Luke's genealogy, he doesn't trace Jesus back to the son of David, son of Abraham. He goes all the way back to who? The son of Adam. Okay, because for Luke, this is not a Jewish story. It's a human story. Because Jesus is a representative of all humanity. He's not just the Jewish Messiah. He is the king of the world. And then John's gospel, Jesus is eagle, because Jesus is the most godlike. He's the most transcendent in John's gospel. If you compare Jesus in John's gospel as opposed to the other gospels, he's just kind of transcendent, flying above all of it. The other gospels do a good job of showing his humanity. They also proclaim his divinity. But John does a great job of portraying Jesus throughout the entire gospel as God. There is no scene where Jesus is sweating in the Garden of Gethsemane and his sweat turns to drops of blood. None of that in John's gospel, because the cross is just a moment of victory for Jesus. Okay, so he's a little superhuman. John's Jesus is a little superhuman. Okay, all that to say that Matthew is the most Jewish of the four gospels that we have. So it makes sense that we would use a very Jewish character like Moses and say that, yeah, Jesus is a new Moses, okay? He teaches with authority. He reinterprets the Torah. He's a giver of the law. He's on a mountain, so on and so on and so on. Fill in all the blanks. Bible nerds, I have an announcement. My brand new book, Crushing Chaos, releases May of 2025 and pre-orders are officially open. When I began to learn Genesis in its proper context, I learned that the creation account is not primarily about God creating something out of nothing, but rather God bringing divine order to the chaos of the cosmos. That one nugget was a game changer for me, because I've been preaching to all the kids in my youth group that peace was a solution for their anxiety. But really, God's solution to chaos is never peace, but rather order. Peace isn't something that you stumble into. It's something that you intentionally step into. And that starts with aligning your life with God's order. I think that this book is a game changer. It's nerdy, it's practical, it provides a very contextual understanding of the book of Genesis, and if you grab a copy, you'll learn why there's a huge dragon on the cover. Head to the link in the show notes to pre-order, or head to crushingchaos.com to see the really dope trailer that we made for this book. I think it's time for you to crush the chaos in your life, and that starts with grabbing a copy of this book. Now, back to the podcast. Our Talmud's truth is actually going to come from the life of John the Baptist. Okay, John the Baptist. John the Baptist sends messengers to Jesus and with a question. This is a neutral response. It's not positive, it's not negative, it's a neutral response. Okay, this is in our block of teaching from Matthew chapter 11 to 13. And John's got a question. Hey, is it you or should we expect somebody else? And Jesus quotes from Isaiah. He's like, hey, the blinded eyes are open, the poor are preached to. You know, he kind of gives his whole Jubilee spiel, but he leaves out an important verse, and that verse is, the prisoners are set free. Essentially, what Jesus is saying is this: John, I am the Messiah, and that has no bearing on your personal situation. And a lot of times, I hear a lot of people who it's almost like their belief in Jesus is grounded only in their personal testimony of how Jesus has done awesome things in their life. And that's great. Like, that is good, but that can't be the whole reason why I have staked my life on Jesus, right? There has to be something more than that, because at the end of the day, Buddhists also have testimonies of how Buddhism has helped them. Muslims also have testimonies about how Islam has helped them. Like, that can't be the end-all be-all of why Christianity is true. And so Jesus is saying, hey, John, who I am and your personal experiences are not equal. Just because I'm not going to rescue you from prison, just because you're going to be beheaded, doesn't have anything to do with whether or not I'm the Messiah. And it's a lot like, you know, hey, whether or not God heals me doesn't have any bearing on whether or not he's a healer. Whether or not he provides for me has no bearing on whether or not he's a provider. And sometimes, especially in church, it's almost like the proof that he's a provider is that he's provided for me. And the proof that he's a healer is that he's healed me. And the proof that he's a blank is that he's done that. And the reality is that, no, the proof that he's done that has nothing to do with my personal experience. The truth that he's done that is that the scriptures are true. And I believe in the scriptures. And the scriptures declare that he is that, regardless of whether or not I ever experienced that. And so the caution, the thing that we should learn from John the Baptist, is do not place the person of Jesus within the box of my personal experiences with him. Just because he hasn't delivered me does not mean that he's a deliverer. And so for John the Baptist, he's starting to ask some questions about whether or not Jesus is the Messiah. And it's totally based on the fact that John's just in a bad spot. John has wound up in prison and he's going to die. And his experience with Jesus is now coloring his theology of Jesus or his understanding of Jesus. And we have to be really, really careful that my personal experience has not become the totality of what I believe theologically. That is a massive, like, pitfall of humans, I think, interacting with God, but of Western Christianity for sure. I gave a lot of context clues today. I gave a nerdy nugget and I gave a Thomas truth. I hope that that's really, really helpful. I'll be here tomorrow to go through Matthew chapter 13 to 16. And we'll be looking at the next block of teaching, this fourth block that Matthew has orchestrated in his gospel that gives us another vantage point on the person of Jesus. All right. I'm proud of you. I'm so happy that we're on this journey together. Hey, if you've got a 57-day streak going, let us know in the comments. I want to cheer for you and can't wait for one day. One day we're going to be at 365 days done. And man, that's going to be insane. All right. I love you. I'll see you tomorrow. Peace. Thanks so much for joining us on the Bible Department podcast. You can find us online and learn more about the show at thebibledepartment.com and on Instagram at the Bible Department. If you enjoyed this episode and want to dive deeper into the Bible, you can get free access to our library of courses at thebibledepartment.com. We'll see you back here tomorrow.